Welcome to the Fitness FAQs podcast, where we learn from the smartest people in the world. I'm your host, Daniel Vadnell, a physio from Australia with more than 15 years of calisthenics experience. Saturnal Movement is an industry leader in bodyweight training. If you want to get stronger at calisthenics, Gabo Saturnal will help you avoid mistakes and unlock movement mastery. What did you learn from the experience of burning out and having to start from scratch all over again?
More than I've learned in my 25 years of life previous to that, I would say. The main thing is it made me a better coach, 100%. Because when I began calisthenics, I had a bodybuilding background of 10 years and I could already do push-ups, pull-ups. I unlocked my muscle ups on the first day. And I was not aware of how to actually train a true beginner. So for me, when I would train a beginner, I would go straight into like push-ups, even pull-ups or negative pull-ups. Being myself a beginner or getting myself to be a beginner, I realized that a pull-up is a very complex movement. It's a movement that if you don't know how to activate your scapula, if you don't condition your joints properly before that, then you can really run into issues. Now, I had the background, so I knew how to do pull-ups. I knew how to do the movement itself, but I lost so much muscle mass, so much strength. I also got incredible golfer's elbow that would flare out every time that I did pull-ups. So I had to regress to movements that I never did previously on my career. Like literally I'm talking bench dips, elevated push-ups, rows, active to passive hang, just to build myself from the ground up. And it just opened my mind because I spent like 1 year, 2 years there, hollow body holds from advanced talk, not even full hollow body hold, elbow plank, scapula push-ups on my knees, I couldn't even do like a proper, like I could do it, but I felt like regressing those exercises was going to give me a better foundation. So that's what I did. And it just humbled me so much that now I feel like I truly know how to train a beginner from the ground up. It just humbled me.
Now, for people that have seen your work, you've gotten to a very advanced level. You've got crazy flexibility, great body weight strength. We could all say that you've essentially mastered a lot of the main calisthenics movements. From the outside looking in, it's quite shocking to hear that you had to start all over again. What was the backstory behind why that happened?
Okay, so I was pretty much on my peak, I would say 2019. Like I was in the best shape of my life. That's when you actually came here. I mean, you came here like 2 months after I began burning out. But I was on my peak, best performance ever, almost getting to the full planche. Almost finally getting to the front lever, which has been my nemesis, as you probably know. Like I was the strongest ever been, both in my skills and in how my body looked. And then Saturnal Movement happened. We overpromised things to the community that were humanly impossible to produce, like way more programs, way more things that I could possibly do. I put my training completely to the side. Then I got a notice from immigration that I had to get married as soon as possible. So I didn't get deported back to my country. So it was a lot happening. I was new to business and I completely stopped training. I was sleeping like 3 to 4 hours a day, a night. And I slowly begin to lose strength and muscle mass. I began getting lighter and I told to myself, oh, I'm getting lighter. So the skills are going to be easier. I couldn't just grasp how much I was losing. And I just lost it was a matter of a whole year of just sleeping 3 to 4 hours, focusing on the business, trying to get all the wedding ready. And I couldn't drive because my license got revoked. It was a lot life related. I also made so many business mistakes, like hiring 10 people that I couldn't even manage when honestly you need like one person at the start of your journey. In long story short, I just did way too much. I put too much on my plate. And obviously I couldn't focus on training. I couldn't focus on nutrition. And I literally hit rock bottom.
It appears that burnout, especially from a physical performance perspective, the best sign that you can have of that is your strength decreasing, just all those signs of like overtraining, even just like apathy towards your workouts, maybe your sleep's affected. I'm sure that you were experiencing some of these things along the way as well. And the hard thing when you're in the moment is to treat yourself like you would treat other people. And I'm sure if someone came to you with your exact situation, you'd say, well, maybe you should just drop a workout or two per week and just maybe take care of some of these other areas of your life to make it more sustainable and like be able to get through it and continue. But I mean, that's easier said than done when it comes to yourself.
Yes, like exactly. I would have taken a different approach. I would have like done two workouts a week, just full body training, just maintain, don't try to increase your strength. But instead, I didn't have the time to train them throughout the whole day because I was filming. And then I would train like at 2 a.m. in random workouts. And then I would go to bed at 3 or 4 a.m. And I'm like, and then I would wake up at 12. And it's like, I didn't do things right at all. Like I look back and when you look back, you're like, why? Like it's so obvious. It was so obvious. But when you are in the burnout phase, it's very, very hard to actually see it.
Yeah, that's why taking stock of your own life is just probably one of the most important skills that we can all learn, because by doing that, then you can just see if your values have changed. You know, at one stage when you first got into calisthenics, maybe you wanted to do all the movements and that required such a dedication to the craft. But then over time, you need to like really internally look at what is most important to you and do that. Because I see a lot in calisthenics, especially because there's so many different skills and exercises to do, it's very common for people to just want to keep doing everything all the time. I can only say this with such like clarity because I've also done this in the past by trying to get a planche, but also do handstand push-ups and 90-degree push-ups, do heavy dips, and then just train so many hours. Basically, you can have anything you want, but not everything you want.
100%. 100% with you.
Now, you said before that you had an injury. What guidelines would you have for people returning from injury to their best self?
Which injury? Which of the many injuries that I had? So I would say that the first 6 years of my calisthenics journey, I got probably 7-8 injuries, like 40 plus dislocations on both of my shoulders because not training correctly. I had like lower back pain because of like being too heavy. Doing deadlift too heavy. Like, I don't really know what caused that. I got a lat tear. I got a labrum tear because of the dislocations. I had pain all over my forearm, like literally tendonitis, like full-blown tendonitis, not even golfer's elbow, like full-blown tendonitis on my forearms the first 6 years. Now, when I restart my calisthenics journey, I literally had zero severe injury. And this is not to say you cannot get injured if you train properly. Like, I'm not saying that by any means. Like, we are humans, shit's gonna happen, and you are going to get injured if you train hard enough. But this just goes to show that I was in my 20s and I was like being able to recover more and everything. But since I was doing too much, and this is prior to hitting rock bottom, since I was doing too much, not training with a proper program. You asked me on the first interview that we had, like, do you train with a program? And I'm like, nope, I haven't had a single deal a week ever. And that's probably why I got injured so many times. Now, when I restart my training, I just do an accumulation phase of 4 to 5 weeks, 6 weeks max. Then I do a deload. I progressively overload in a proper way. I select the appropriate progressions. And I think that's the way to go. Now, the injury that I had after I hit rock bottom, I'm like, okay, let's train again from scratch. I had golfer's elbow. And the thing that started out the most, or the only thing probably, was pull-ups. So I didn't do pull-ups for a complete year. And I just did rows, 5 sets, 3 times per week, really build that base from rows. And that's the only severe injury that I had from 4 years till now, I would say.
Golfer's elbow is probably the most relatable overuse injury for everyone listening that's doing calisthenics. And we could both speak to this at length and we can really help people out. Probably the biggest takeaway I could say is just not being afraid of variety. And it's almost a double-edged sword because we all know if you want to get strong at something, you have to do that thing and you have to do it frequently in order to maximize your strength gain. That's the most efficient and optimal way to do that. However, it comes to a point because if you do too much of the same movement, you're stressing the exact same area, and you almost have to play the long game. So instead of doing your pull-up training with the same grip 3 times a week, try and see if your symptoms are okay doing the same grip 2x a week and then doing a variation on the 3rd. And if that's still causing issues, maybe try a variation every single session. Just doing that by itself, even with like volume matched across the board, keeping it simple, might alleviate that symptom in the first place.
Like it did for me, like when I heal from the golfer's elbow, like, okay, now I can do pull-ups. I begin with neutral grips first. Didn't cause pain, but pronated still caused pain. And then I just trained Monday pronated, Wednesday supinated, and Friday neutral, which is a lot of pulling work. Like, yeah, don't go ahead and train frequency of 3 unless you've done previous work before. But then like after 3 months, I said, okay, let me try doing pronated every single Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And literally after 2 weeks, the pain came back. And I'm like, okay, there is a lesson here. Now, after 2 to 3 years of from that moment, I can do pronated pull-ups, weighted pull-ups Monday, regular pull-ups Wednesday, like pronated Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and I'm still going to be fine. But probably if I do that for long enough, it's going to come back again. So the lesson that I really got from golfer's elbow is just variation, just varying your grip. And not only your grip, but obviously the width. Or using rings, body by rings. You got it.
That's it. Thanks for the free promo there.
You got it, my man.
In addition to that, I believe we don't respect the rate of progress enough with calisthenics because we know that there's a mismatch between tendon healing and how quickly we can recover, you know, CNS-wise and just how our strength progresses over time. Taking a more patient long-term approach to pulling progression is going to alleviate a lot of those golfer's elbow symptoms in the first place. So just like trying to have that foresight will separate you from other people because we're all passionate. We all have like motivation in spades. We're going to do our sessions. People that do calisthenics and listen to calisthenics podcasts, they're not skipping sessions for the most part. So it's more about just like restraint of the extent of your progress. Don't go from doing plus 20 kilo pull-ups and then within a month rocking like 30, 35. It's such a big percentage jump, even if it's possible. And the last thing I'll say is technique, technique, technique. I see people trying to maximize their strength by just using like very ballistic reps. And it's fine to demonstrate your strength and perform at your peak, but it's quite aggressive on the tendon complex. So if you want a more prudent approach to longevity and just making gains and trying to mitigate this injury, I'd say just pause at the bottom of each pull-up, chin-up, neutral grip, chin-up that you do, and your elbows will be so much happier.
Yeah, there are so many ways to actually make an exercise harder. And you say something like, the fact that you can do something doesn't mean that you should do that thing. So the fact that you can do like 25 pull-ups now, maybe, and you just got from doing 20, just, I don't know, massive PR, 5 reps from 1 week to another. Maybe just stay on 20, just add a 0.5 pause, don't even add a second pause, or add a full pause and then go back to 15 reps. And another thing that I'm seeing is this big trend of weighted calisthenics, which I completely support, you completely support. And since we have this on the bodybuilding community, 8 to 12 is the most optimal range given fatigue and a stimulus. And we have on a strength, 5x5 is a great approach. I see people getting to 10 pull-ups or 12 pull-ups and no, I want to work for a strength because this is a strength sport. So now I'm going to add 25 pounds and do 5x5. And it's like, how long have you been doing 3 sets of 10? No, just 1 week. But I can do 3 sets of 10 and I want to work on strength. It's like, maybe first get to 12, then I spend a couple more months on 12, then maybe add 5 pounds, go back to 10, then add 10 pounds. Like, I don't know where this going from body weight to adding 25 pounds came from. Like, you don't see this happening even on powerlifting. Like, you don't see this happening on powerlifting. Like, they take their time with progression. They add literally 5 pounds to the bar, even as a beginner.
That's a great observation. Yeah, I agree, because it's almost needs to be treated as a separate domain almost, because hypertrophy, like, it's all about the effort relative to failure. You've got those higher rep ranges, which builds a certain skill set of how you have to train. And then strength, completely separate. So I almost go with like having one session of that moderate to higher rep range to build muscle, and then your lower rep range to build strength, but not trying to do strength all out from the start if that's something you're just introducing, which you just said.
Exactly. Like, as soon as you get to 3 sets of 10, like, I don't know why people go to 5x5. I know why. Like, you want to work on strength. But it's like, you're not ready. Your muscles might be ready. You're going to be able to do it, for sure. Like, if you do 3 sets of 10 body weight, if you have 25 pounds, 100% you can get 5 reps. But I don't know. I think people rush too much into the body weight progressions. It's different from weight training in so many ways. Like, I don't want to put rules as a standard, like you should get to like 20 pull-ups before you add weight, or you should get to this amount of dips before you add weight. But the more conservative you are on that area, and the more you spend on that body weight exercises without adding weight, I think the safer you are going to be. I don't think 3 sets of 10 for pull-ups is enough for adding weight. Many people will disagree, and many people have done the opposite. They get to 3 sets of 10 and they just add weight and they're totally fine. But for the majority of the population, for normal average human being, and I include myself in that, just get to 15. The hypertrophy range is 5 to 30. And it's a range where even 35, you're still building muscle. With dips, many people compare about, are concerned about like a sternum pain. And they complain about sternum pain. Yeah, because you probably got to 15 dips and then you're working on doubles and 1 rep maxes. Get to 20, get to 30, that would be my standard. Like, I would get a beginner that tells me, I want to compete in weighted calisthenics. First, get me 40 dips, man. Like, literally get me 40 dips and then we'll start adding weight. Then we can start the 20, then we can add the 25.
Training to failure is very common in calisthenics. What are some of the limitations of going too hard too often?
I would say the main limitation is fatigue, something that I was not aware at the beginning of my journey because I was on my 20s, I guess. But even if I didn't feel that fatigue back then and I was able to do 2 hours of yoga and 2 hours of calisthenics, something that I cannot do right now, physically impossible, probably because I have other responsibilities, which we can talk about that is not only about training that adds fatigue, but all the other factors. But training to failure, yes, it's effective. Yes, it's improving to build more muscle. But the cost is so high. And it depends on the individual. Some people can really handle that. They have greater testosterone. There are many factors that can influence that. Or the only thing that they need to do is training, so they can actually afford that. But even if they can afford that, I do believe, I'm a hard believer, that just being a bit more conservative with how you approach failure and the intensity of the exercise, it's going to lead to better results. Excuse me. And again, to a longer game. Like, we're going to be doing this forever. And we can divide this into hypertrophy and strength. For hypertrophy, I would allow more that going to failure type of thing. But for strength, higher fatigue, and also I've seen personally, and with the clients that I've coached, greater gains from an RP7, RP, even sometimes RP6, like solidify that pattern. I'm not saying RP6 week 1, week 2, week 3, week 4, but if you're doing a 6-week cycle, yeah, why you start on an RPE8, then you add 10 pounds to the weighted pull-ups, and then you reach RPE10 by week 2, then where do you go? That's where people,
exactly,
like, they don't add more, and then what's the point of training?
Yeah, starting your new workout phase with failure from the beginning, you can't tell me that you can train to failure for 6 to 8 weeks and keep improving with your numbers over time. It's just, we're not built that way. Unless maybe you're an absolute beginner, that's a whole different story. And the interesting thing about failure is that often we're poor, like, reporters of how hard we're working relative to failure. So interestingly, people that say they are trained to failure often aren't. This is often like studies where people that are reporting this are like 5, 6, 7, 8 plus reps away from failure. And the importance of this becomes more the longer you've been training, because the amount of effort required to go to failure on a consistent basis, especially with like strength skills and stuff, you're creating so much fatigue as like a more intermediate to advanced athlete that in the totality of your workout phase, it's not going to accumulate to more progress.
100%. And this is, I think, more prevalent on body weight exercises because of the technique demand. Let's put as an example, like back to all hands and pushups. If you're going to true failure, like you cannot do a single rep more, your back is going to arch like crazy. No, your low back won't explode. I'm not concerned about that. But I'm concerned that you're going to be using a bunch of other muscles instead of actually targeting your front delt, which is probably why you're doing that exercise in the first place. And so you are like, yes, I'm getting this one rep, these two extra reps, but you are not actually using the muscles that you want to be using. So you're not going to be developing the actual strength that you want to be developing. Now, don't get me wrong. There are times to train hard, especially for strength. It's a skill that you need to be able to like push that boundary. But true, and that's why, like you said, we need to define true failure, because true failure, the cause of fatigue is just way too high, man. It's way too high.
I love that observation specifically for calisthenics about how technique gets compromised, because on these complex bodyweight movements, it just, your body finds the strategy where it can demonstrate its most power, especially when you're fatigued. So you're going to compensate away from the ideal, you'll arch, etc., as you just said. Whereas if you're taking your advice from purely bodybuilding, failure is accepted and welcomed in certain contexts because that is less likely to happen. If you're on a machine that is stabilizing for you, you can literally just be using your chest on a machine bench press, and that's it. You can force yourself to stay into that posture. Whereas with calisthenics, it's not the case. So it's that fine line of working hard close to your maximum with a progression mindset, and that will add up over time. Your technique won't go to trash. You won't build bad habits. You're less likely to get injured if you're working at that capacity. And this advice is good for the majority of people who are listening that aren't 15 years old, that have a body built of titanium.
None of us have.
Now, with calisthenics, choosing the correct exercises is something that gets quite complicated. Why do we have to do it, and why is it important?
Because you make more progress and you're less prone to injuries, and those two. Like, how can I give an example? A 90 degree handstand pushup. Let's say that you can do 2 90 degree handstand pushups. On the second one, you arch. Again, your spine is not going to break. Nothing is going to happen. You might be fine, but you are not. First of all, you are creating bad habits, just like you said right now. Second of all, you are not building a strength on the actual relevant muscles of that movement. You might be losing all the protraction, your serratus go to failure, you're extending more the spine, so your chest gets involved, and you're not getting the full movement pattern. So yes, you got 2 reps, but what about going to straddle and doing 2 reps again? But you're doing the movement perfectly. We can talk about technique and all the different variations, because that's a huge topic in calisthenics. I'm not saying that you need to do it perfectly, but there is a level of compensation that I think people break too much because of obviously ego. And or sometimes it's ego, and sometimes, like, if you're choosing the wrong progression, it's either ego or it's a fear of not progressing. It's like you have this fear that if I don't do the full 90 degree handstand pushup, I will never unlock it because it's not specific enough. And I'm straddling my legs, and yeah, like I will never get it unless I do it. It will come a time that you have to do it, but you need to know when is the right time.
What about the people that want to jump straight into the full movement because they've seen others do it and they'll use any means necessary to do so, i.e. using band assistance, even when they're right at the beginning of their journey?
If they get lucky, they will get to the full movement. Let's use, I don't know, instead of front lever, let's use planche as an example, because planche tends to be more technical and also pulling movements, like the joint is, you're not compressing the joint per se. On a planche, it's on any pushing movement, it's more of a compression of a joint if you're not using the proper muscles to support the position. If you get lucky, you might get there. And there are many people who has gotten there. And you see like before and after of these world champion athletes doing like bent arm planches, and then they suddenly have the cleanest planche ever. But that's very, very rare. Like, we got to understand that that is very, very rare. And that the most effective way to actually get to that position, again, for us mere mortals, that we have imbalances and that we need to condition our joints properly, just regressing to a progression that you can actually manage is the best way. I'm not saying not use bands, but don't use bands in a full planche. Use bands in an advanced dog, and I would, I mean, for a beginner, I wouldn't even think about planche progressions at all. Like, I would literally just build, like, some people start the planche without even realizing that they have like zero muscle. And yes, we see these skinny people like doing amazing planche feats, presses, push-ups, because they probably have a greater neural capacity than others. But for the majority of people, strength is neural plus strength plus muscle equals strength. Therefore, you do need a base of muscle to support those movements. And as we just spoke, we can create muscle much faster than the connective tissue capacity. So I just said that we need to spend more time on basic positions to reach that level for the majority of people.
It seems as if you get people in calisthenics that just want to maximize their strength and their skills. They don't care about looks at all. And then you get other people who are a bit more focused on building muscle and aesthetics to support their goals. Where is the sweet spot? Like, is, as you said, there's some shortcomings with going just full calisthenics bro mode, just all skills. And then there might be some shortcomings of doing probably too much bodybuilding type of work. Well, how do you know when it's enough?
I think this greatly depends on the individual. I can speak for myself. Like, if I tell you I need to build more lats for my front lever, for the record, I still don't have a front lever. If I tell you that I need to build more lats for my front lever, it's like, dude, what the heck? Like, your lats are fucking huge. Like, I know my limitation is more narrow. So for me, it's more spending more time in the position than just cranking out a bunch of pull-ups, because I already crank out a bunch of pull-ups too. But if you see a very skinny individual trying to get a front lever, and you see that he's stuck in advanced stock, yes, maybe just go back, build the musculature, and a bigger muscle is a stronger muscle. And then you're going to be able to progress. So I think it really depends on the individual. Like, I was talking to my girl. She's like, she wanted to get the muscle up, but she's realizing that getting the muscle up is building like huge lats on her. And she doesn't like that. She's like, fuck this. I'm all for aesthetics. Like, I like the skills, but I really don't like what this is happening. And she looked at all the girls that can muscle up, and all of them has huge lats. Yeah, they're all huge. But then we find this girl, shout out to Hefesto girl. And this girl is super skinny, and she can do a freaking Hefesto. And she was like, how does this happen? And I'm like, she has more neurons. She's being able to fire the muscles more properly than other people can. But for the majority of people, we do need muscle to perform those skills. Like, if you see world champions in statics especially, they're all jacked. They're not huge, but they're all jacked.
This comes back to the principle you stressed earlier, Gabo, of really having your basics on point. And if you do that, if you've got a really respectable number of pull-ups, dips, you can do handstand push-ups, you're doing rows in your program, all these big basic movements, given enough volume, progression, and proximity to failure, and adequate nutrition, all that stuff, you will build muscle with this calisthenics approach, which will support your practice afterwards.
100%. Like, people ask me right now, like, can I build your physique with calisthenics alone? And I say yes, but obviously I have to be like fully honest. And I say yes because for the past 3 years, I've done very few weighted exercises. I've done like military press, but I do military press because I'm not doing handstand pushups on that block. I do maybe some bicep curls just for tendon conditioning. And that's pretty much it. But the rest has been calisthenics. And if you see my physique 3 years ago, I literally was skinny, like somebody that has never worked out in their life. So I say yes. At the same time, obviously, everything that you do in your life counts. And right now I'm 150 pounds, but I got to the point of being 170 pounds with weight and calisthenics, like being huge. So obviously the muscle has memory. Once you create a cell in your muscle, that's going to be carry on for the rest of your life. So I cannot assure you that you're going to get this bicep by just doing calisthenics. Moment to
put
flex.
Put those things away. You're yeah. scaring the audience. It's a bit intimidating.
That was a perfect moment to flex. I'm not telling you that you can get this bicep by only doing calisthenics alone, because that's not how I did it, but that's how I did it recently. Now, if you ask me, and I only had to give one answer, can somebody achieve my physique? Obviously, my proportions are different, everything's different, but can you achieve a similar level of musculature and leanness with only calisthenics? I would say yes. Now, I will tell you what I did, and it was Monday, Wednesday, Friday, upper body, 3 days, pike push-ups or a variation, a progression of it, like overhead up, overhead down, pushing horizontal, pulling horizontal, and pulling vertical, the five patterns that we know. I began with pike push-ups 3 years ago, and now I'm doing back to all handstand push-up with a weight belt and on the boxes and with pauses and whatnot. But that's what I did for 3 years. Now my training has changed because I want to get the one on handstand, which I don't even know why I got in there, but we can speak about that. And with those exercises alone, like I literally see it impossible. Like it's a physical impossibility, given that the intensity is correct, the nutrition is correct, and you're sleeping enough. For me, it's a physical impossibility not to build muscle. Like, it's like doing bench press, rows, and lat pull downs. It's the same, quote unquote.
We have to mention as well that if the goal is calisthenics, building muscle in the relevant areas is going to be the best use of your time and effort. All those things you listed there, like doing the biceps, if you're going to do some work on your shoulder complex, like lateral raises, it's building functional tissue for the movements that we use with our upper body calisthenics. Now, if you were to be like, okay, what about just doing leg hypertrophy to build muscle because I heard it's good to get strong? Well, quite simply, it's not using the areas that we would in calisthenics, and it doesn't have a direct influence on that. So I'm not surprised that with your situation there, Gabba, it's what happens to most people doing calisthenics with a frequency of around like 3 to maybe 4 times per week on average for the upper body. That's such a good amount of like exposure for stressing the muscles down, getting that protein synthesis for growth. And it's really no surprise why calisthenics have such like muscular physiques when they keep that up time.
There is no way you cannot get it. Now, when you start transitioning to skills and whatnot, then is when, that's why calisthenics has this rap of like, you cannot build muscle with calisthenics. It's because isometric holds, yes, they do build muscle, but not to the extent of a full range of motion movement. So, but if you do basics, if you do the five patterns that I just mentioned in whichever variation you can manage from any rep range from 3 to 35 to failure or close to failure, you are going to build muscle. There is no way around it. Even with nutrition not being so on point, like when I began 3 years ago again, I was eating 1 meal a day because I thought it was good for longevity. So something that, I didn't know any better back then. and I still put like 5 pounds of muscle the first year because obviously those were like the newbie gains. So even if your nutrition is not on point and you're not eating enough, I definitely was not eating enough. It's such an stimulus, like you said, and you don't need to go as far 3 times per week. Just 2 times per week should cut it.
Yeah, and that could be comprised of upper lower split or push pull or some type of like bent arm, straight arm version if you chose to do
100%.
That too.
I got a question for you. Now, before deviating to the other question, you mentioned building muscle on the relevant areas. What's your take on, so we're doing upper body Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and I mentioned that overhead pressing for the shoulders. Nice. Let's say, let's focus on bodybuilding alone whatsoever. And what's your take? And you mentioned using calisthenics to build on the relevant areas. What do you think about using military press for the shoulders instead? Bent arm rows instead of doing ring rows? Bench press instead of doing push-ups? Would you think we would get the same effect and the same transfer following to other skills? Now I'm podcasting you.
Good. I love a challenge. I love to help as well. From a bodybuilding perspective, because you're trading similar movement patterns with weights and calisthenics for the goal of hypertrophy, they're going to have really good results because they're compound exercises. They're quite transferable in the sense that they're targeting the same tissues, albeit open versus closed chain. It's a bit of difference there, but you will grow tissue over time with that. Where I'm a little bit skeptical is the transference of one movement directly to another, given how like every exercise requires skill, technique, and coordination, especially when there's like balance involved. Just say you're doing handstand push-ups, freestanding, and military press with a barbell. Both of these movements require you to stabilize yourself and external factors as well. Whereas if you were to hop on a machine, it's obviously a lot less skill specific. So you could just transfer your brute strength from the muscle mass you have and the overall movement pattern proficiency into an overhead press. So someone that does only handstand push-ups or only barbell overhead press, they can jump into a machine equivalent without too much drama and like be able to use it for hypertrophy. But if you're saying any of those three the other way, like going from machine to handstand push-up, probably going to have a learning curve. From a machine to a barbell, it's going to have a learning curve too. This episode is sponsored by Fitness FAQs. Become a bodyweight beast with our calisthenics workouts. Use the coupon code PODCAST10 at checkout to save 10% off when shopping at fitnessfaqs.com. Don't miss this discount. Start training smarter and enjoy the gains. What are the downsides of deviating from your calisthenics program? I'm talking testing max strength, new exercises, random attempts, and just changing things up.
We don't do that. Like, nobody does that in any sport, first of all. Like, you don't see that in bodybuilding. You don't see that in powerlifting. You do not see it. They stick to the program. Now, in calisthenics, because of how the sport was created, in communities, in parks, and just the hype of it all. Like, if you go to a park, you are going to be doing muscle ups just because everybody's doing muscle ups. Even if you don't freestyle, you want to be able, you are going to get over the bar. And probably you do not have three sets of 10 muscle ups in your program. And then you're doing like 50 muscle ups. You're not doing even 10, you're doing like 50 muscle ups, and then you get golfer's elbows. Of course, like that's pretty obvious. If you're training planche and your progression, and I'm guilty of this too, my progression, I stopped right now training planche, but my progression was advanced talk. When I went to the park here in Miami, we reunite like every Sunday and we do gatherings and stuff. I'm going to throw a straddle or even a full if I'm feeling light. And that's on a Sunday. And my planche workout, it's on a freaking Monday. And it's not even the progression that I'm doing. So there are two problems here, which is deviating and also deviating from things that you wouldn't even do in the session. So that's like a double-edged sword, which both sides are actually sharp. And what are the problems? I mean, higher fatigue, higher risk of injury. You're going to have to probably deload before. You're going to have to cut down on your session or modify the session somehow. And yeah, the worst thing that could happen is just getting injured. But the less thing that could happen is that you're going to have to modify the entire training and make your training, which is where you're going, way less productive, because people think that one attempt won't add that much fatigue. It will add.
Also, you're not going to know what's working or not working. So you've got two scenarios there. Either you start making these incredible gains, which could be for a whole other host of factors. Maybe you're less stressed, you're sleeping more, your nutrition's better, but you threw in these random attempts, you know, in week two, and you can be like, oh yeah, it's because I'm testing my super maximal strength that I don't usually do, and it's transferring to the normal exercises. Or you do too much, and throughout the course of weeks, you can't remember, was it that Sunday session where I was at the park, or was it when I started doing muscle ups third in an exercise and I did pull ups first? The takeaway is trying not to complicate your program so that you can constrain the variables and you can actually see what's working and do more of that.
Bro, that's brilliant. I didn't thought of that. I actually made a video like the problem with calisthenics, and one of those problems was random attempts. And the two things that I said was like getting injured and like adjusting your program and everything that I just said. But I didn't see that part that you just mentioned, which is, yeah, you're just adding more variables into the mix, which we already have way too many variables, including from our body weight to our stress in life. You add that just one single planche attempt. I mean, one single planche attempt might not hurt, but you just add five attempts. Then it's like, okay, what happened? Because you might hit a PR next week and you don't know now if it's the program or the planche, or you might completely exhaust yourself and start declining. And now you don't know if it's the program that didn't work or the planche. And now you need to reassess the whole thing to see what works and what doesn't. And for me, that's one of the most valuable information. Like, I'm tracking absolutely everything from the past 3 years and a half. And because I can reflect back, I can see my progressions, and I'm like, damn, I was stronger in the front lever here than now. What was I doing? What was my weight? What and everything. And I'm also, when I go to the park, so a solution I would say would be to track that too. Just to add it in there. I would literally went to the park and I literally put five full planche attempts, three muscle ups, and I try to track as much as possible, not getting too obsessed with it, but that's going to give you a reference if something goes south or north.
Let's be honest. The main reason people do it is to keep things novel and fun, first and foremost. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but it's having the awareness that your enjoyment by doing this too often and to like an extent that's going to fatigue you and complicate things might actually hinder your progress. So you just really got to know which type of person you are when it comes to training. And of course, there's extremes on either end, and most of us fall somewhere in the middle. Whereas you get someone that's like, I want to progress at all costs, optimal training. They'll never deviate from their program. The order of the exercise will always be the same. It can be clear-cut, objective progress, and that's fine. Both people will be happy. The person doing attempts and maxing out to have fun and see where they're at, or the person meticulously doing their training program and quote-unquote optimal gains are happening. Just don't be that person that's in between those and you're waxing and waning between following a program, doing random attempts, trying to have fun, but you also want to make optimal progress. You really need to pick which type of person you are when it comes to calisthenics. What is the optimal number of calisthenics goals to work at one time?
It depends on the person, and it depends if you mentioned the word goals, but we can talk about goals and we could talk about skills. Because goals, as an example, you could want to improve your one rep max and the front lever. Both of them are goals. Both of them are skills, yes, but let's consider front lever as a skill and one rep max as a general goal of strength. Those are things that you can work simultaneously and they complement each other. Now, if you're talking to me about front lever and one arm chin up, yes, they might complement each other, but they might conflict each other. So I would pick one of the two. So let's just separate them instead of talking about goals, because goals, we could talk about increasing flexibility and building bigger biceps. And for that, we could do like fucking 10. Now, when it comes to skills and very specific attributes or movement patterns, again, it depends on the person. I wouldn't go more than three. And it really depends on the level and what else do you have outside of training, and a million of other factors. But let's go to the level side of it. If you're a beginner, you could definitely train for the pistol squat, L-sit, and handstand, no problem. If you are more advanced, I wouldn't recommend training for the one-arm handstand, the planche, and the Victorian, for example. And those are 3 and 3. But the level of demand that this takes in comparison to this, it's just so much bigger. But no more than 3. Again, 4 could work, but it depends on your starting point on each skill and other factors.
I like that you made it clear on the skills that work a similar muscle group and or overall movement pattern. Even though some things you said there were full range of motion and or isometrics, they're still fatiguing those same prime mover muscles. And it's great that you mentioned that around 3 is like probably the upper limit, because if we look at it, when it comes to making progress, there's a relationship between how many goals you do and your rate of progress. More goals, less progress in terms of extent and the speed of it. You've got like one goal that you're doing, you're just going to be less frustrated and making super speedy progress. Once again, it comes back to which of those you're willing to accept, because I just want people to know that if they really want the most possible progress on X movement, just do X movement as your priority and really disregard all the noise of the other exercises. Whereas if you're someone who's like, that is really boring to me, I don't want to just do one movement, that's like specialization, I'll stop training and I'll get burnt out, I'll pick a few things. Just know that if you do that path, the consequence is that'll take you longer.
100%. And I think people are afraid, me included, of just focusing on one thing because it's going to take longer. But I wouldn't say most of the time, again, it depends on many factors. But it could be that you're actually going to get there faster. If we compare, let's say, just one skill with two, let's compare 2 to 3. I think it's more realistic. If you compare 2 to 3 skills, like if you just focus on 2 skills, you're going to get them, let's say, a year. And then you go to the third skill while you maintain this, you get this one in a year, that's 2 years. But if you go for the 3 skills, which I've done, we could talk about my experience too, 2 years, you're probably not getting the 2 skills, the 3 skills. So it's like people think that they're going to be going slower for less skills, but you're probably going to be going faster. Now, you could take it to the extreme of like, I'm just going to train for the L-sit and that's it. And I'm like, no, come on, bro. Like, you could do something else if you have the time. I mean, if he has other reasons for just training the L-sit, okay. But if he's like, I'm just going to train for the L-sit because it's the most optimal way, I'm like, I mean, if you had some pulling work, it won't hurt you. It probably is going to help you.
Yeah, and the thing about that whole like losing a skill or being afraid of not being like to maintain things and holding on to trying to do all of your pushing exercises out of fear, having some faith that if you're doing these non-gimmicky exercises, say you're doing heavy dips, do you really think that your progress will decline that significantly on handstand pushups given you have a little bit of practice on the movement? Not really. It's
really.
Where people should be afraid is if they just started doing, as we said earlier example, oh yeah, I just want to do just machine work now because I want to, you know, build muscle. It's a different goal, but you need to understand that your transference won't be as similar as doing like a calisthenics to a calisthenics movement.
Yeah, it's like I wanna maintain my pro lever, so now I'm gonna be doing lat pull downs and bodyweight rows because those are the prime movers of the front lever. I'm going to maintain my front lever, but I'm going to do 0 front lever work. No, man.
A good sign that maybe you are doing too many concurrent skills is that you just plateau. And you could probably speak to this as well, Gabbo, but I found that when I'm doing like dips, handstand pushups, and planche, trying to do all 3 at once, I don't get better at any of the individual ones. And there's just this like perpetual state of fatigue for me personally. I find that if I was to juggle 3 skills at once, my program would have to be absolutely perfect. I couldn't deviate. Everything would have to be on point. Whereas if I just go, okay, settle for two. Yeah, settle for two. It will be so much simpler to progress without trying to get all this fatigue and this fear of like not having your skills.
100%. 100%. Like I've tried three skills. In these 3 years, I've been juggling between three and two skills. I've been dropping some, grabbing others. And two skills seems to be the sweet spot. Like three skills, you do progress at the beginning. But then it's like, boom, you hit a fucking wall.
Yeah.
And maybe one of those three skills, like maybe you keep progressing on that one. But on the three of them, optimally, no. And then it just becomes so frustrating. Because it's like, to get a full plunge, given that your everything is optimized and you are not 6 foot, 6 foot three, are you?
I'm 6 foot. Thanks for the inflated height. 183 centimeters.
183?
Yeah.
Okay. 2 years, like it's realistic if you just focus on maybe planche and front and that's it. But if you add to that handstands, if you add to that increasing my one rep max on pull-ups, holy man, increasing flexibility, then you add to that, it's like, oh man, no. Like, I mean, you might get lucky and people get lucky. Like, we have these outliers. But again, for us mere mortals, man, I just cannot recover. And you follow me on Instagram, you see my diets, you see my nutrition. I'm like, dial in. Yes, I have business and other stressors that has to be taken into consideration. But I'm dialed in with my training. And whenever I do too much, I just don't progress or progress way too little.
Yeah. And you think about it practically as well. Anyone that's tried to juggle three pushing skills, three pulling skills concurrently, just mentally trying to psych yourself up to give that same amount of effort on all of those in a session, I'd almost go as far as to say it's impossible to have equal effort, enthusiasm, and just like that drive to progress, because that's one of the limitations of exercise. The first exercise in your program or workout of the day, you're most fresh, you can give the most to progressing. Second, still room to do so, but it's contingent on, you know, how much fatigue you produce from the first. And then you drop down that ladder even further to the third. Let's be honest, transparent. When you're at that last exercise of the day, it's the one where you question yourself, should I progress? Should I just drop a set?
Yes, 100%. And not only in the session itself, but also like in life and how you, because if you're pursuing the planche, you are not thinking about the planche when you're training. You're thinking about that fucking movement before you go to bed, when you wake up, you are putting yourself in the position, like on the bathroom, or I do that. And then if I have like planche from lever one hand, and it's like, okay, so like this and the balance component of it. And some of them help each other, handstand push-ups, planche, for example. But some of them really, I wouldn't say contradict, but yeah, I'm actually going to use that word. They contradict each other. Like they're like opposing muscles. Like a one arm handstand, which I'm working right now, the amount of push that I'm doing here, the scapula position, the balance component, the being light sometimes, the like so many other factors that it's a balanced technical skill. And then you compare that to a planche, where generating more strength, more power, eating a bit more maybe, but not too much that you get too heavy. All those factors combined, then is that's why like I admire so much people that freestyle calisthenics and like actually compete and do freestyle and statics, because those are two completely different worlds. Like I do admire those people. Damn. Like two totally different sports. Totally different sports, which you need to combine. And it's like, do I build enough muscle? But then I'm gonna be feel heavy for the freestyling. It's hard. It's hard to combine.
Now the handstand is a movement, skill, exercise that when people first start learning, fall in love with it. You have as well over the years. And I noticed that you've started the one arm journey. You've been in it for some time now. What have you learned and what's the reality of the one-arm handstand for people who want to pursue it?
Yeah, so I saw your video about it and I know your take on it, which is maybe it's not worth it. And I'm going to agree 50% with that because it is true. Like, you do not, you are not aware of how much time you need in that skill. Like, people tell you you need a lot, multiply that by 1,000. Like, you need so much time, so much energy. So it's such a hard skill that you really need to ask yourself if is it worth it. Like, today I was training my one-arm handstand. I'm like so close to it that I'm like, I'm not dropping it. But I, even being so close, I already got my 5 seconds, and like in a matter of a week, I get at least 10 seconds of 5 seconds, 10 sets of 10 good holds of 5 seconds. Even at that stage, I'm still questioning if I want to drop it because the sacrifice is so big, because it is literally 8 hours to 10 hours a week. And that's on the lower end. Most people that train one-arm handstand, they just go for the one-arm handstand and that's it. So I had to drop planche, because before I was doing planche, front lever and one-arm handstand, I'm like, I try for a 3 month and I'm like, no. Drop the planche, which is a pushing skill, which is my love and desire. It's actually the skill that I want the most. But I saw myself closer to the one-arm handstand. So I'm like, okay, unlock either the front lever or the one-arm handstand and then maintain and then go to the planche. 10 hours of work a week, which is on the lower end. Like, it's literally on the lower end. Like, if you really want the one-arm handstand, I would actually recommend every single day. I'm seeing myself 10 hours. Okay, 10 hours is literally 10 hours of doing an exercise that is building zero muscle. So I'm seeing myself shrink. I'm seeing my chest shrink, my shoulders shrink, which I don't care that much about aesthetics, but I do care a little bit. I'm seeing that I'm not training planche, which I do care about that skill. And I'm like, fuck, like it's a lot of work. So to just wrap it up completely, if you're going for the one-arm handstand, or if you're even for the planche or whatnot, but for planche, if you're really strong, you can get lucky and get it faster. One-arm handstand, even if you're really good at balance, I haven't met a single person that unlocks it fast. Like, it takes at least a year. I started training it 8 months ago. I think I progressed really fast just because the background that I had on hand balancing. And it's been 4 sessions a week, so not much. But for every person that I talk, it takes 18 months for the first 5 seconds. For the most people that I've talked, and I've asked like 15 people, Monday through Saturday, not training any other skill. So just consider that. Just consider that you have to drop everything else Monday through Saturday, training 2 to 3 hours. Obviously, build yourself up to that for 18 months. That's 1.5 years to just get 5 second hold. And then I just get it and then I maintain it. No, maintaining it is not just 1 session a week. It's going to be 3 to 4 sessions still. It's going to be lower volume for sure, but it's going to be, you're still going to have to put a lot of work. So only if you really love the one-arm handstand, I would go for it. That was a long rant.
I love it. One-arm handstand can be summarized in one word: sacrifice. I found the exact same thing with my journey. And it only becomes clear now, reflecting back on it. I'm like, oh yeah, I want a one-arm handstand, but I love doing calisthenics and all the stuff that's involved and dedication with calisthenics. Why is there no one doing everything and one-arm handstands? This is what I think now. Like, whenever you see someone doing one-arm handstands, they are in the handstand community. They're just doing handstand retreats. Their circle is people that only do handstands. They're not doing pull-ups, dips, chin-ups. They're not lifting weights. They're solely dedicated to the one-arm handstand. And I only realized that towards the end, which is what made me have that perspective to make the video on, is it worth it for me at this stage with what I want to keep doing long-term? And I did not want to sacrifice everything else that I wanted to do to keep progressing with the one-arm handstand.
You'll get smaller for sure. Like, I'm getting smaller. That's no question about it. There's no way around it. There's these 10 hours that you can dedicate to military press and exercises that, yeah, and other sacrifices. And yeah, I also asked my question, like, why I haven't seen a one-arm handstand, solid, like hand balancer style, not calisthenic style where they like manipulate it with this and it's kind of a flag. And
off
it's
the
only
parallel bars with an arch back, yeah, and closed shoulders.
Exactly. Why I haven't seen a full clean one-arm handstand and then they drop into a full hollow body style plunge. Why I haven't seen, there's probably some people here that can do that, but, and I thought at the beginning that it was because of the difference of scapula position, especially because I have some scapula issues that the more elevation I do, the harder it is for me to depress and just posteriorly tilt the scapula into the planche position. I really thought it was that, but then I realized that all the handstand that I'm doing is not harming that scapula position. And then I just came to the conclusion, yeah, nobody has it because you're gotta dedicate 3 years here and then 3 years here. And nobody wants to do that. And that's just for two skills. That's just for little two skills.
The last thing I'll add on the one-arm handstand, I don't want to make it seem like I'm negative Nancy about this movement. I've enjoyed the process of learning it. It's the feeling of doing it when you catch like a, for me, it was like doing a 10-second just like fluke on the right arm. You feel like a god because you know what you had to do to like the hours and your background. You didn't learn as a kid. It feels really gratifying. But the struggle that I personally faced was with a two-arm handstand, you don't need a ton of flexibility to do it. Like you can hold it. It's not going to be as efficient. And granted, you'll fatigue sooner. But with the one-arm handstand, because you've got forward to back, side to side, rotation, your joint stacking becomes integral for holding balance. And what I found, which was a really challenging journey, and like anyone else that's like bigger and a bit stiffer can relate to this, I had to work on flexibility, which is basically end range strength training with weights, whilst concurrently doing one-arm handstands. So what would happen over time, my closed shoulders would gradually become more open. But at each step of becoming more open, you have to learn how to balance your body and stabilize in that new range. So the path to learning a one-arm handstand, if you don't have great flexibility and alignment to begin with, will take even longer. So that will be rewarding, yeah, to you, but it'll also frustrate the hell of you because you'll really go through a lot of undulations of success with your balance.
That's the main reason I'm going for it. Also, first of all, I love handstands. And second of all, I'm really good at it. Like I have natural flexibility, like it's not a problem for me. So I think it would be a waste to not double my strength. Planche and front lever, I need to stabilize so much of my scapula. I need to do so much specific work on my scapula and on strength because they do not come easy to me. That is like, yeah, I want those iconic calisthenics movements, but it's like, I don't want to drop something that really comes easy to me. Like I got it in 8 months. I'm estimating that in 3 months, I'm going to get a consistent 10 to 30 second hold because I have all that flexibility. I don't have to work for it. I'm just doing like one active middle split hold a week. And that's making me all the programs that I need to increase my middle split. I haven't done a shoulder mobility exercise in 3 years. I'm actually doing the complete opposite because I open it too much. So it's like, it's coming easy for me. But yeah, like if you're a stiff person, I'm not saying that you cannot get a one-arm handstand with a little bit closed shoulders and with a shitty straddle, but it's going to take you that much longer. Again, if you really like it, go for it. But just understand there is a lot of sacrifice to go for it.
With the rotator cuff and scapula, there's so many exercises which are promoted, especially for people doing calisthenics. Should everyone be doing these exercises?
Absolutely. If you don't do it, your shoulders are going to explode and you're going to go to hell.
You're done if you don't. That's the basic answer.
No, not everybody does needs them. I don't believe anybody needs any exercise. I do believe 90% or anywhere that range would benefit from it. Can you go an entire career what is this street lifter that does it, that does like three exercises, like very minimalistic, and he's like the strongest one in the
Matthew Zlat, the OG, mate. Shout out to the beast.
Yeah, shout out to the beast, brother. He's a minimalist, and it's working for him. I don't know if he's changed over the years or whatnot, but I think it really depends on the case, and you really need to assess and be honest with yourself, like, what do you really need? And also, there are so many exercises that you need to really figure out which ones are the ones for you. Like, okay, external rotation is one of the most common one, Cuban rotations. But then we have like wide raises for the lower traps. I did a test. It's from another shout out from Matthew Smith, where he makes you test a 6 rep max on your dip. And then based on that, it tells you how much you should externally rotate with a specific tempo and 5 rep max. I did that test, and my external rotation is frequently strong. Like, I can do 25 pounds for 5 reps with a tempo of 3-1-x-1. But then I went to the Y raises, and I was supposed to be doing 25 reps for some amount of weight. I think 25 pounds. 5 reps for 25 pounds. And I was only able to do like 2.5 pounds for like 5 reps or something.
Yeah, right.
So I realized my lower traps are weak. So what I'm trying to get across, and what people can get from this, is that not all the stability scapula exercises are for everyone. My serratus is weak because of my winged scapula. I need to do, or I benefit from doing wall slice. Most people don't. Most people, their serratus is flat. They don't even need to think about it. And their protraction is just nice. They need to work maybe on more mobility on their scapula, but they don't need to be doing that. So it's important to really, in this regard, trials and error or a good coach, to find out that exercise that actually going to benefit you. Now, I would still argue that for the majority of people, our external rotators are weak. And even if they are not, doing some work there are going to benefit most of your upper body movements.
Yeah, well said. And it's finding the specific weak link that matches the movement that you're struggling with, either through pain or you just aren't as strong as you'd like to be. The great example you just said there was the Y raise. So if someone's doing handstands as an example, you just look at the movement of your arm and the muscles that you're trying to improve their function and strength, it supports that exercise. So that's probably the biggest thing I would advise people if they're overwhelmed with the thousands of different variations of scapular drills and rotator cuff stuff. If it's ticking that box of matching the movement and muscles involved, that's a really good place.
100%. A key examples in a front lever, if you see that when you're holding, these tend to happen. Lower traps, 100%. That's when I keep your scapula in place and gonna posteriorly tilt your scapula. You don't need to remember that, but that's what it does. If you're seeing on the planche that people think like, no, you're losing protraction, that you are retracting. Okay, if you're retracting, that's one thing. But if you're seeing this happening, let me show this better. If you're seeing this going up, yeah, working on your serratus, it's going to be a great idea because you want to be here. Why would you want to be here? Not because it looks pretty, but because a strong scapular position is going to support those static movements and it's going to put less pressures on the joint, which is another topic in and of itself. But yes, finding your own limitations for the movements that you want to get good at, it's key.
And the closing point I'll affirm from the lessons you've just taught us today, Gabo, is choosing the right progression of the exercise will often address that weak link. So if you're someone that's doing a really advanced planche progression and you are falling into a retraction, you can't feel any connection there, or your overall mechanics don't reflect that of the desire, then it might be a consideration to maybe step back and like actually address the exercise with good technique, with a proper progression for your level.
Yes. A good example for that one would be like, I didn't do elevated push-ups at the beginning because I couldn't do push-ups. I could do push-ups, but my scapula would literally wing on the first rep. So I chose a progression, elevated push-ups, where I could keep my scapula flat in the rib cage, and I would be able to retract properly and protract properly. Now, there is a caveat there because I was also doing regular push-ups, because you also don't want to, you also don't want to fall into this, like everything has to be perfect and I have to work all my stabilizers and all that. So I was doing regular push-ups just to build my chest and whatnot, but I didn't neglect doing an easier variation to work on that. That could happen for front lever, for front lever, for example, if you don't have enough retraction to actually hold the position, but your lats are really, really strong, you may be able to do a straddle hold of 5 to 6 seconds to work on the strength component of it, but then maybe either add some rows or add a tuck, advanced tuck front lever, where you can retract more, so that way you are targeting the lats on this side and you are targeting the retractors on this side. Then those two goes together, and then you got a front lever. Hopefully,
perfect, perfect non-dogmatic approach. And just the nuance of exercise, well explained. After someone that's been doing calisthenics for so many years, what have you changed your mind about the most?
So I read that question that you sent me, and I couldn't think of anything. I couldn't think of anything related. And I know that I don't want to sound like I was always right, because I'm not. I just couldn't think of something specific. I would say I used to think that more is better. That's one thing. But something that a mistake or something that I thought in a wrong way that I changed my mind, I couldn't find it. I'm going to get back to you, because that sounded like I didn't learn anything, but I haven't reflected on that question enough. And I just literally just read your question like 20 minutes before the podcast. And I'm like, what has changed? What did I thought wrong? And I just couldn't. So sorry, viewers. I don't know at all. I probably did a lot of mistakes, like a lot of mistakes. I could probably say more things about nutrition that I thought was wrong or that I learned. But in terms of calisthenics as the sport, it's just respecting the progressions is something that I didn't know. It's not something that I got wrong, but it's something that I didn't know.
With the scapula and rotator cuff, I made the mistake of introducing too many of those exercises in my warm-up, spending too much time doing them. Even though the intensity wasn't that high, I found that it made me feel good in the moment, but upon looking back, it did fatigue me to an extent, because sometimes I got carried away with how many I was doing and how much. Even purely from, it would have taken me like sometimes 20 to 30 minutes, I'm embarrassed to say it, to warm up. And it's like, you know, all this like band off, because I've learned all this stuff and I just used it incorrectly with calisthenics. So the biggest lesson that I've learned is appropriately doing things when they should be done. So when I'm training, I'm training. I just do a general warm up with like cardiovascular stuff, like a walk for 5-10 minutes. Then I do a specific warm up on the exercise that I'm about to do, highly specific, maybe just a regression, then into the working sets, done. Then separating on either another day or later in the day, doing my scapula and rotator cuff work when I can give 100% effort to it and treat it like a strength training focus.
Okay, I'm actually going to agree with you on that one. And you just gave me more ideas. 100% with you. I actually have one video on YouTube called my personal warm-up, and it's scapula push-ups, handstand shrugs, scapula rows, a bunch of scapula exercises, and I said, we're not only warming up the scapula, but we're conditioning the scapula.
Yes, and, good distinction.
And I'm like, and I look back, and I don't do it anymore, even though I still have the same problem with the scapula, because it's just fatiguing me for that. So what do I do right now? Just one set of wall slides, because I know I do feel better when I engage my serratus. It's not an activation drill. It's not a turning on the muscle drill. It's just, for me, it's more of a proprioception. Just, I would say, warming up the muscle more than activating the muscle or any fancy drills that we see on Instagram, like activation drills. I do hollow body holds before my front lever workout, but I don't do it 1 minute. I do like a 30 second. Now, that could be as an activation drill that is a waste of time, but I'm doing it in a way that is not fatiguing me, and it just makes me feel good. But that also comes with what type of person you are. I tend to perform really well when I'm really warm up. Like my PRs, like even my endurance, I think fatigues prior to what my one rep max. Like I could do you, many people would say, for example, a great example, do explosive movements at the beginning. If I warm up and then I do explosive pull-ups, I'm going to get it up to here. If I do a complete workout of pulling and then I do explosive pull-ups, I'm going to get it up to here. So that's very specific to me. That's why, like, yes, you got to understand the theory, explosive movement first, one rep max and then volume work. But sometimes you got to experiment to see what really works for you, because that's super specific to me. I don't know a single person that can do explosive movements at the end. My last exercise is back to all hands and push-ups, because that's an easy exercise for me. So yeah, just knowing yourself and knowing your specific individual case on certain attributes and where you fatigue the most and what's actually, like you said, useful or not. Currently, I also am with you. I realize that for me, if I want to condition my scapula and if I have a big problem and it's something that I need to address, I'm doing it on separate days. I have literally two separate scapula days. I'm not doing it more on my warm-up as an activation drill, because that's probably tiring me more to the workout. So I'm just doing two actual workouts for my scapula. Another thing that I changed my mind, if I remember, because I think I kind of lost it. I used to think 3 years ago that high volume was the only way to train. Not the only way, but it was better, superior, especially in calisthenics, to high intensity. That was because I was a beginner. That worked for me. I trained a bunch of beginners during that time doing online training, and all of them got great results, but all of them were beginners. And then I keep doing that high volume work and I stop progressing. And suddenly I drop from doing 5 sets of 10 to doing 3 sets of 4 at a high intensity. And I'm seeing way more progress. So something that I've changed is that there is no such thing as high volume, low intensity is better than high intensity, low volume. I think one, it depends on the individual, and it depends on your training career, where you are in your training phase. Are you a high volume guy or a?
I fall somewhere in between, and like most people, you go from doing high volume, low intensity. It works for a while until it doesn't. You do high intensity, low volume. It works for a while until it doesn't. And then you realize that doing something in between works most of the time, and then changing between has merit in its own way to drive different aspects of progress. So it's not as simple as one is superior than the other. They're all good in their own right, and they all work well until they don't. Now, you've built Saturnal Movement to one of the best reputable calisthenics brands online over the years. I'm sure it hasn't been easy. It hasn't been a linear progress upwards. Can you spit some words of wisdom for people listening that want to pursue entrepreneurship or even build their own fitness business?
Okay, so fitness business is, I would like to see it as two main categories, which is what you share on social media that brings you the money, and your service or your product, which is what people pay for. I would recommend to have this down as soon as possible. Some people might disagree or might not, like build your audience first and then focus on this. But I would focus, like if you want to live out of this, like if you don't, I just want to get followers and that's it. If you want to really live only out of fitness, currently, right now, if before was hard, right now it's extremely hard. There is a lot of competition. You got to create something really unique.
Your product and service has to be something that's valuable and different from the market.
Spot on. So what people tend to do is that they create a product that's good enough, and then they sell this as a gift to people, and they sell this as a magical and the best program ever created. And then they see money, because when you sell, that's when you do social media, that's when you see the money. And then they're like, oh, here is the money. I'm going to be putting more time here. So they keep putting more time here without realizing that this is not a gift. This is crap. And if you create a crap and you're promoting the crap out of your crap, then the word of mouth is going to lower your reputation, and it will get a point that you will have to make a switch, which happened to me. I created a website with great programs. Like, I'm proud of what I created, but I was not aware of the platform where I was putting the programs, the organization of the programs, and yeah, the whole structure of it. And I promote the crap out of it, and I just got people in and out, in and out. And I would say, they would tell me, your programs are great, I love everything about it, but it's a website, I need to log in, I need to do all this work, there are too many programs, it's too confusing, why don't you sell the programs separately? And I was like, so I had to like literally go back, which was this year, and just put all that into an app, just remake my service, so then I could sell. So the best piece of advice is focus first on the product, create something really, really good, really, really solid. That's something that you did. I mean, you can do both simultaneously, but that's something that you did. You created Body by Rings, probably your most popular program till date. And that is something that people recommend to everybody. Like Yasir bought your program when I met him. Michael, which is my new employee, bought your program. Like, it's a program that it's an evergreen, that it's going to get promoted because you put in the time and you don't have to do anything else on that program. Now, you need to create more programs because that's what you're passionate about and that's what the route that you chose. But it's not that you need to remake this whole program and change it and do anything, because it's an amazing program and you can now focus on social media. Because if you try to do both simultaneously at a high level, it's very likely that you're going to burn out.
Especially without a big team.
Especially without a big team, because you're going to be alone at the start. So what I recommend before going outside, yeah, you can post your progress. You can start slowly building your social media. But before you go and decide, I'm going to post on YouTube once a month, once a week, and I'm going to post on Instagram every single day, just make sure that at least on piece of paper, you have a solid product that people are going to be willing to pay for. Because if you don't have that, you could have millions on social media. People are not going to buy your product, or they're going to buy it and tell other people how bad it is.
Excellent advice on both business and calisthenics. Gabba, that was a pleasure speaking to you, mate. I really enjoyed the time we connected in 2019. This has been fun as well. If people want to follow your work, where can they find out what you do?
SaturnoMovement.com, SaturnoMovement on YouTube, SaturnoMovement on Instagram, SaturnoMovement on TikTok, SaturnoMovement on Facebook, and my personal IG page, Gabo Saturno. Saturno, pretty much.
Great stuff. Thanks.
Thank you so much, brother. Always an honor to chat with you.
If you enjoyed the Fitness FAQs podcast, leave a rating to show your support. See you next episode.